What's going on, guys? Today is March. No, it's April. April 8th, 2 o'clock Eastern, like it always is when I start my live show now. So I don't really have a show planned, so we're going to kind of wing it. We're going to talk about freight. We're going to talk about rates again. We're going to talk about how much you hate brokers. We're going to talk about a new massive lawsuit or a new class action lawsuit that has the potential to be massive. Now, it's not the one that I talked about last week, but it does involve that same favorite three-letter brokerage. So we're going to talk about that today. So that's a big, big news story that I haven't really put out, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to pick it up because it's already a class action lawsuit. Anyway, so we're going to talk. We'll give updates on the truck stop slaying from yesterday. And we really don't have any other new updates versus what we talked about yesterday and then in this morning's 5 minute of freight. We're just going to talk about freight. We're going to see what it's like out there, what you guys are hearing. Today, we moved freight again on our broker side. We didn't really have any issues with it. Hopefully, it levels up for you guys out there, the carriers, and you're able to make some money. Who knows? It doesn't seem like a lot of people are making money right now, but hopefully you guys will soon. Okay, so the very first thing we're going to talk about, I moved over because I didn't get it all set up properly. So now the call-in line is over here just for the day. I have to update the coronavirus cases this morning because they are big. It went up because if you guys watch my 5 minutes of freight this morning, we had over 400,000 cases here in the United States, but we had 12,000 deaths. This has taken a massive leap. New York so far over the course of the day has had 779 new deaths in New York. That is today. 272 in New Jersey. Even I think in Florida, we had 13 new deaths. So this is crazy. It's really going up. And we'll check at the end of the show and we'll see what it's looking like there. But hopefully it slows down. Because everyone says New York is at the crest. That's what they were saying today in the morning news. They looked like it was going to be down. But I don't know. I mean, I just see deaths that are going to keep coming up and up and up and up. And then who knows. But let's read some of these comments. And then, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to give the updates first on this truck stop slaying from yesterday. And I'm not trying to glorify it or anything else. It's pretty messed up, if you ask me. So I wrote this article yesterday. Which you can see here. If you go to freightbrokerlive.com, you're going to see this article. This is about a truck driver. And I know he does work for it. He was a company driver for one of those megas out there. You guys can imagine who it was. They have Facebook pages dedicated to making fun of him. Anyway, not this guy, but the company. Nobody knows the motive for it. Nobody understands anything. Now, when I wrote the article and I put it on social media, of course, people jumped on it just because of the guy's name. We don't know anything else about it, but because of what the guy's name is, everyone jumped on it and said it has to do with terrorism and all this stuff. Nothing is known. They don't know if he knew the people that he killed. Nothing is known. Here are the facts. Just before 7 a.m. yesterday morning, a truck driver, for whatever reason, went on a rampage at a Pilot in Tennessee. He killed three people, three workers, three women workers at this Pilot truck stop. He also stabbed another one, another customer. And then he was apparently chased out by men. And they chased him out into the parking lot. The police arrived less than 2 minutes after the initial 911 call. They were told by witnesses that the guy was in the parking lot. They saw that there were bodies in the parking lot and in the store. They found the guy in the parking lot. They ordered him to drop his weapon. He chose not to drop his weapon, so the cops did what they should have and shot him. And he's gone. But with that, we're not going to have a lot of answers on why this happened. There's a lot of people that have taken, looked up the guy's name. It's in my article. They've looked up the guy's name and posted other people that aren't even this dude and posted their pictures saying this is the guy. There's a whole bunch of people that are doing that. So keep your opinions on what happened to yourself. And that's what I'm trying to do is keep my opinion on what happened to myself until it comes out, till the TBI says what it is, and that's the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. Well, as I said, at some point, the whole thing is just crazy. Pilot CEO Jimmy Halslam, who was on the scene that morning, the morning of the stabbing, said they released a press conference. He's the CEO of Pilot Travel Centers. He released a statement saying, "Today is a difficult day for the pilot community, a company family. We are devastated to confirm the loss of three team members and the injury of a guest after an act of violence at our Strawberry Plains, Tennessee location this morning. It is with heavy hearts that we extend our deepest sympathy to the families and loved ones of the victims. We are providing support and counseling to the families and our team. We are working with local authorities." Nobody else knows anything. So anything else you hear, if it's not coming from a news source, if it's not me, if it's not any of the other, you know, freight media or regular media outlets, do not believe it. There's too many people on social media that are literally just posting stupid stuff and have nothing to back it up. And it's super, super annoying. Anyway, with that said, I haven't really covered any other news. I was working on a really big story that I'm going to put out hopefully after, and then I got on a couple of phone calls over the course of the day, so I haven't really been able to pump out news like I normally do. I will talk briefly about this $25,000 Heroes Fund that the Democrats want to set up, and it's great. I think it's great. Yeah, as most of you guys know, I used to be a firefighter EMT. I work in trucking now. I've still got friends and family that are public servants. They're out there doing stuff just like truckers are out there being in the middle. I'm safe in my house. I don't go anywhere. I'm not being subjected to potentially catching this stuff. But those guys are. So Democrats, Senator, Majority, whatever the hell the guy is, Chuck Schumer has put out a plan to basically pay $25,000 to each, or this is what they want to do in phase four of the coronavirus, like loans and all that stuff. The phase four of the law that they want to pass and the regulations and funding and all that. $25,000 to each person who is working during each essential person, and they included truck drivers in that statement. That's prompted a whole pile of people. I had people yesterday during yesterday's show that were asking about it. I didn't know anything about it because I was busy yesterday. So let me tell you what I do know about it now, because I did a little bit of research. One, it's not a law, it's not in place right now. Is it going to get a lot of support from the trucking community? Probably. But the fact is, one, is it going to become a law, and is it going to happen? Who knows? You know, if you have a Democratic-controlled Senate and a Republican-controlled House, I don't know, or whatever the control is. But who knows whether it's going to pass? Is it needed? Yes. But here's the thing with these funds. If they are to come out and to become made available, they're going to go to company drivers, and they're not going to be, it's not going to be a $25,000 payment to a driver. The funds will be dispersed to companies who request them, and the companies will be held accountable for the funds, where they're going, the reasons why they're paying out these drivers. If they were truly part of the essential recovery, if they're hauling recovery goods, or they're just considered essential and hauling freight, that's not the same thing. So I don't know, and that's one of the reasons why I would hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't think it's going to come out that way. I think it's too big of a deal. And any funding right now doesn't seem to be working the way it's supposed to. But that's one thing that I wanted to cover on, because I didn't get a chance to yesterday. All right, the phone lines are active, 914-803-4008. Again, I don't really have a plan for today's show, so we're just going to kind of wing it. I was too busy. I didn't have time to plan what I was going to talk about. So we'll see. I see a couple of comments about the freight cliff. So we'll address that. The freight cliff. Yes, Mike, Jamie, it is here. It's been here. It's been here since essentially Monday. I said that on Friday. I said, okay, the rates are coming down. The rates are going to come down. I'm going to be able to move a lot of freight, because technically I move cheaper freight anyway. That's what my customer pays. My customer's non-essential, but for some reason they're able to ship stuff. So they're shipping, and we're able to cover freight, and we've been covering quite a bit of it. It's not high-value freight. I do see the market. I do see the lanes drying up. I talked to a buddy of mine that I haven't talked to in a while that works for a big a big broker slash carrier, third party logistics company. And he works mostly with intermodal. He said intermodal's way down. They're down, but the rates are all over the place. No one could figure out what the hell the rates are supposed to be with intermodal lanes. They keep going. Jamal Gant on Facebook just said Texas is pumping, but that's contrary to Michael with PDQ that came on the show the other day and said the oil fields and all that are taking quite a hit. I don't even know what the market is today. I've been just too darn busy to pay attention to anything that's going on. To answer your question, yes, a freight cliff is here. As we know from my State of Trucking video yesterday and all that stuff that I did on it, trend lines are trending way down. Load volumes are way down. Capacity is way up. Everything is way screwed up. I don't know how you say your name, Mario Ann Farad. You're welcome to call in if you'd like, if you have something to disagree with. Welcome to call in 914-803-4008 or type it in the chat. That's one way or the other. But load to truck volumes are way down. Dry vans were over 45% reduction from last week. Reefer was almost 50% reduction from last week. And if you remember last week, it was down, 48% from the week before? Reefer rates, flatbed rates, and van rates are all down across the board, according to DAT Treadlines. Freight volumes have dropped. 60% of businesses are closed right now. And for the most part, non-essential freight is the only thing that's moving. I don't know. Were employment numbers released today? Because I think they should have been. I didn't even check. If the employment numbers were released today, I'd be curious to see what the unemployment numbers. Let me see if those were released. I don't know. I really don't know what is going to happen to the freight industry. I don't have any idea. I'm not even going to look that up. If someone knows, you guys could put that in the comments. 914-803-4008. You said let's talk about it, right? I don't know what you mean. You're welcome to call in if you'd like, because otherwise the one word sentences don't really help me trying to decipher what you're trying to say. Anyway, Benjamin on Facebook said we're getting $3 a mile California to Washington. It's hard finding anything out of Washington lately, but we've been able to do it. That's good. I heard that too. Intermodal's running up there too, but the rates are so up and down. They don't know. One day it could be 37. Next day it could be 42. It could be just all over the place. Benjamin said reefer loads out of California have been paying well. Yeah. And projected COVID-19 deaths are dropping dramatically out west. Yeah. Well, that's kind of where it peaked. It peaked out in Washington first. So, well, I don't know. I hope it's done. You know, I hope we start that down curve and life gets going back to normal. But the problem is that no matter how long it's going to take, if we take 2 weeks getting up there, you can't just say, okay, the numbers are finally starting to come down, so let's just make life back to normal, because then you still have the virus out there. They have to stop the virus. How long are we going to be on lockdown or restricted activities until this thing is done? How long are non-essential manufacturing plants and businesses going to have to be closed? How long is that going to last in the transportation industry? I have no idea. I would love to be able to answer that question, but I don't know. The only thing I know right now is that the freight industry, we're at a turning point. Companies are laying people off. Trucking is down. LTL carriers are taking major hits across the boards. Journal of Commerce wrote an article about Edouie Pyle, which I saw the screenshot a couple of days ago. I know there's another LTL carrier out of Texas that had to make some drastic cuts to payroll and driver pay and everything just to make sure they're able to keep everyone employed, which, as I said to them, is a very valuable thing, because people are just laying people off instead of just saying, hey, we're going to cut your pay to make sure you still have a job. So that's going on in the industry. People are getting laid off left and right. People are losing their jobs. And if this thing keeps lasting where there's no freight, or there is freight, but it's super cheap because a lot of the carriers that you see on social media think that it's brokers. And I already talked about it yesterday. It's not freight brokers. I know it's just so easy to be the person that is to blame for everything, but unfortunately it's not the truth. But there, that's it. Whatever. You guys are being weird. The phone is working. You just got to dial in 914-803-4008. Hamza Beggar said, what did I have for breakfast? Eggs, all that stuff. Alum said, Amazon is taking over. Actually not, because Amazon was in the news today. Amazon was in the news because they decided to shut down their Amazon shipping service. Now, if any of you guys don't know what the Amazon shipping service is, remember a while ago when I was talking about how eventually they'll purchase FedEx or they're going to be running that kind of freight. And then it came out like a couple of days later that they were currently beta testing a pickup and delivery service for some specific customers. But they were testing it out because to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. You already have all the trucks all over the place. Why not just do that? Why not just create your own, FedEx or your own UPS? Well, they tried and they were going through it, but apparently it wasn't profitable for them. And so they made a decision and they sent out emails to all their customers yesterday that were participating in this program, according to the Wall Street Journal and Business Insider. And they've sent out an email to all their customers saying, hey, we are going to stop this and suspend it because it doesn't work. Who knows if that's what that means? Are they suspending it? Are they terminating it indefinitely? Or is it going to be over? Who knows? But Amazon is likely not taking over the way that I thought they were going to. And I, to be honest, here's the thing that I don't know. And I'm really curious if, and I keep asking for some of these people that work for the bigger brokers or that do RFPs and stuff, what is going to happen to all these quotes and all the contract freight and all that stuff? Because when rates, this is what I think is going to happen. When we come down, we're going to lose a lot of trucks and all that stuff. And then when we start coming back up, all the freight rates are going to go out the window. All what people are getting, everyone's just going to try to make as much money. And then it's going to surpass where it should be. And at what point do contract rates have to be renegotiated because of a natural disaster? Like, I don't know. And that's what I'm curious at. Is there like a disaster clause in these contracted rates agreements that allow you to... like fix it, I don't know, or to modify it so it's current. I'm really worried about that because I think as manufacturing, there's articles every single day about all these containers sitting at the ports, just waiting, all these ships waiting, just waiting to offload everything. And nobody can do it. All right, buddy, you're gone. You're annoying the crap out of me. See you later. But that's annoying. But yeah, it's... Who are these troll guys? Whatever. On Facebook, I've got a couple of jokers trolling. They're funny. Anyway, I really don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the trucking industry. I'm a little bit nervous. Are we going to be able to rebound? Absolutely. We always do. But whatever. Who knows? Yeah, those darn trolls. This guy, what kind of comment is that? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, I'm going to play a commercial and get some water, and then we'll come back and we'll just talk more. People ask questions if you got questions. I don't have a whole show planned, so if I don't get it, I'm just going to end the show super early. All right? I'm simply the best, better than all the rest, yeah, better than anyone.
What's a singing goat have to do with factoring? Nothing. OTR Capital. Better than the rest.
I really, really enjoy that commercial. I got to make some more when I have more time. All right, so we have some questions. Team Tiny said, what is the timeline for a rebound in the freight market? I have no idea. That's what I'm saying, because we don't really know. Like, if the president is saying the lockdown could end in May, then that is probably when rates will come up. There's an abundance of freight sitting ready to be shipped, with all the containers that are going to be coming in, because freight is now shipping out of China. So I really don't know. I would say I don't know. I really don't know. I wish I could answer that, bud. I have no idea. Jeffrey Child said, is it good advice to go home and wait this out? I don't want to give that advice. I can only say if I was out on the road right now, I wouldn't be. I'd be at home. And the reason is I've got kids. I've got a wife. I don't necessarily worry about the virus as much as I worry about what other people are going to do. You know, we had, like I said last week, some kids set the woods on fire two houses down. That could easily spread and burnt up the houses. People are going to, I mean, we're hearing that, you know, more and more stuff. Violence is up. Domestics are up. All this stuff. So I really want freight to come back to normal. I want it to be better. But Team Tiny said, thing I don't hear anyone talking about is all the restaurants that'll close down. That'll take a huge bite of reefer, I'm assuming. Yeah, restaurants are closing down, but and that's one of the interesting things. On Friday, I played the video from the onion guy. I forgot what his name is. He's on YouTube, and I'm gonna check and see if his video's on YouTube so I can share it. But he basically grows these giant onions. They're only used in food service. They're only used by restaurants and other food service. They're not sold to consumers because what the hell are you gonna do with an onion that's literally that big? So he's got millions. He had a new video on LinkedIn the other day. Millions and millions of onions that they're just throwing away. Millions of pounds of onions, I should say, that they're just throwing away. Because they can't sell it. They can't donate it. Who's going to eat that many onions? You've got produce brokers that have cases of watermelon. Not cases, but the bins of watermelon sitting, can't being sold, have to throw it away. You've got milk producers that are literally dumping out tens of thousands of gallons of milk across the United States. It's taking a huge toll on everything. And that's kind of where I'm, you know, I focus primarily on logistics and trucking. I'm a little bit nervous as to what's going to happen in the long run. What is it going to mean to the restaurants that have had no income coming in for the past couple of months? You know, that's, or the businesses that haven't, the trucking companies, the other people that don't have the availability to go and work from home like I do. H. Davis said, speaking of produce, have I heard anything else about the CHR lawsuit? No, I haven't. But that's one of the things on my checklist to look up this week. I know C.H. Robinson did just donate $50,000, and the fund that they donated it to was also named in that class action lawsuit. So I don't know. I will look at that because I think that it's literally, I've got a list of everything I got to follow up for, which is how I found the new TQL lawsuit. So why don't I talk about that? So TQL is yet again getting sued. This time, it's not by one small carrier. Because remember, they had the big data breach in February, which you heard first from me. They had a big, massive data breach where carrier information, customer information, but was released. The significant part for carriers is carriers' banking and financial tax IDs, social security numbers, if you're registered as a sole P. That information was compromised, and that whoever was the responsible for compromising was changing payments and changing bank account information. And they found that at the time of my article, it was under $100,000, according to TQL, or according to reports, that under $100,000 was stolen. So they would put the wrong bank information, or the hackers would go in and change the carrier's bank information. So the day after I wrote the article, which was on February 27th, on February 28th, a little one truck operation from East Bum blah blah, Wisconsin, decided that, hey, this company sent me a notice, said there was a class action lawsuit. I'm a super trucker that only runs 50,000 miles a year, but I'm going to go out and I'm going to file a lawsuit and say that my whole trucking business has been ruined by this lawsuit. You could tell how I feel about that first lawsuit. I kind of think it was frivolous and dumb. So I wrote like a glancing paragraph about it. Didn't write a whole, maybe I wrote a whole article, but it wasn't a big one because who cares, right? It's just a little guy that's trying to go get paid. I get it. Then TQL lays off up to 700 people. They still won't tell me a number. I'm still maintaining it 700 because I had too many people say it. So I go in today to just do an update on the original class action lawsuit or petition for a class action lawsuit, because that the guy who filed the lawsuit in February against TQL for being, he was a carrier and he had his information compromised, was looking to have his complaint certified so other people could join his complaint so it would be a class action lawsuit. Don't know whatever happened with it because I didn't hear anything about it. Because today when I log in, I see in the past 2 months, there has been another lawsuit. And I'm like, wait, what is this? TQL has another lawsuit? Let me look up what that lawsuit is. Well, this one is a class action lawsuit that's already been filed because it has two classes for the same data breach. And I'm like, oh man, people are really getting into it. But then I look into the trucking companies. And yes, one is a little trucking company that started in May of 2019 who doesn't really have, you know, a whole lot of history, but that's fine. And then one is 150 truck fleet. So it's not a small company. And so those are the two classes that have filed this class action lawsuit. So then I start reading into the complaint to see, and they all say the same thing. Oh, our information was hacked and vulnerable, and we're vulnerable to a big lawsuit and all this stuff. But then I see something where it said that the one truck operator had, you know, everyone had to take steps. This is known. Everyone had to take steps. If you got an email from TQL and said your information was hacked, then clearly you all called your bank and freaked out, and you called your credit cards and you freaked out, and you spent a little bit of time. This little one truck operator, he missed out on an 850 mile load that was paying $2,500. He had to spend upwards of 15 hours, remediating all the issues that he had and changing bank accounts and all that stuff. But I guess he didn't change his bank account because the lawsuit also states that he has noticed fraudulent charges in his bank account since. And because this is the only notification that he received of a data breach, well, it could only be this one. So they've sued. It's an interesting case because the complaint, because I read so many of these lawsuit complaints daily, it seems. This complaint's written pretty good. It references a lot of stuff, and it's very full. It has a lot of information in it. And the fact that it's not just, I haven't really looked beyond the 150 truck fleet guy. I haven't looked to see what kind of history they have or how old they are or where they're from or anything beyond the fact that they have 150 trucks. But I think it's interesting because now there's a class action lawsuit against this. So what happens to a big company like TQL when they're faced with a class action lawsuit of a data breach that happened and people were harmed by it? By their own admission, companies did have funds diverted that should have had money sent to them, had funds diverted to other companies. That's how they found out. According to my sources there, an accounting lady went to verify that a carrier changed the bank account information. They said, no, we never changed our bank information. And that's how they found out they had a data breach. How long the person was in the system isn't known, except that I was told it was quite a while. So, which is kind of funny because the other media outlets also pick up these lawsuits and complaints. But do you know whose article is mentioned in both class action lawsuits? Mine, because I broke the story. But anyway, it's kind of interesting to see what's going to happen with them. You know, it's very interesting to see what's going to happen with a class action lawsuit of this side. Are they going to settle? Are they going to fight it? Because they're notorious in trying to fight these lawsuits and all that stuff. It would make interesting for me as a writer or publicist, or, you know, a journalist, whatever you want to call it. It would be very interesting for me to cover it and to see what they're saying and have that kind of little world of TQL opened up if they do it, but they probably won't. But who knows? But that's a new lawsuit that's up there. I'll have an article out tonight at some point about that one. Let's read through all these comments. There's a ton of them. So, Jeff, I answered your question about just go home and wait this out. If I was on the road, that's what I would do at this point. Just because what kind of support services are there out there right now for truckers? We know everyone's calling for it. OIDA is calling for it. Other ATA, I think, is even calling for it to have truck stop testing. OIDA is like, well, we need to have tests come back in a couple of hours. They can't do that for anybody. So that's likely not going to happen for truck drivers, but they should have some sort of road system or health system in place, whether it's LabCorp or one of these companies, you know, all these. Think about a drug consortium, because if you're part of a drug consortium, you have access to an urgent care everywhere, because if you get called in to have a random, they're going to just pick wherever the hell you are, and you're going to go to an urgent care and take your UA. But again, urgent cares don't have the testing capability. So what we've been hearing is urgent cares have been turning people away. Are you going to go sit in a line for 6 hours waiting to get a Q-tip shoved far up your nose for the test? I don't know. But that's something that needs to be fixed. Trucking needs some sort of security, I guess. Because, like someone just said, do we know any truckers that are out there with it? No. And I don't know if we're going to know of a lot. I don't know if we're going to hear about a lot of them that are. And why? Because they're truckers. Truckers don't complain about shit unless it's brokers. They complain about brokers every day, but they don't complain all the time. They don't. They sit there and they drive their trucks. Yes, they're obnoxious and annoying sometimes, but they're not going to sit out there and complain. It's like the driver I talked to. He's like, yeah, I think I got the coronavirus. And I said, have you gone to the doctor? He's like, no. I said, what are your symptoms? He's like, well, I can't hold my breath for more than 2 seconds. I said, you need to go to a doctor now. He's like, well, I got to deliver my load first. That was priority to him. That's what he cared more about, is making sure his job was done. I'm like, go to the hospital. Be responsible. Go to the hospital. And then he went to a hospital. And guess what? He calls me and he's like, yeah, they wouldn't test me. They said I need a doctor's order to get seen. I'm like, are you kidding? How are you supposed to get tested? But he did finally get tested and he does not have it. But it's crazy. Lindsay Smith said, what should you charge for a layover fee right now? It's supposed to deliver a load tomorrow. Drop is refusing a load till Friday. Like I said, a layover should be at least $500, in my opinion. Are you going to get that? Who knows? You shouldn't get anything less than $250. And any broker right now who says that, oh, I can't pay you a layover, the customer's not paying it, we didn't know it was closed, it's a natural disaster, blah, 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 that's kind of BS, because all customers know, at least all my customers know, that if something like that happens, you're on the hook for it. And Lindsay, and I don't know, you may already have it set in stone, but when you're booking loads, every single carrier who books a load right now, before they book that load, they should be telling the broker, hey, yeah, I'll take that load, but I need you to write a couple of things on it, on the Raycon. Oh, yeah, what do you need? I need $75 an hour after 2 hours. I need $250 for a truck order not used, and I need $500 for a layover. Well, I can't write that. Well, I can't haul your load. Well, I could do that. All right, just make sure it's on there before you print it out or whatever. Because here's the little thing. If brokers say they can't write anything on Raycons, they're lying through their teeth, because they could. Every TMS system allows them to add notes. They could put it in the pickup note or something. But everybody should have that on there. Everybody should have it. Quite a few of you guys do. You send me messages all the time saying you're able to get the funds. But a lot of people don't do that, and then you're stuck wondering what the hell you're going to do when you get to a delivery and it's closed. Pers Mall said, Jeff Bezos looks to hire 100,000 recently laid off restaurant workers because Amazon can't keep up with the orders, and at the same time, Bezos asked the public to donate Amazon relief fund for his contract employees working. I know. Whole thing doesn't make any darn sense. It doesn't make any sense. I got to play a commercial real quick. I don't know who this call is. Hold on 1 second. I'm simply the best, better than all the rest. Yeah, better than anyone. I'm the best. Whatever. I don't even know who it was. It was spam, but it came up with like a number close to my family's house, which is why I answered it. That's weird. Anyway, Amazon looks to hire 100,000 people, but their workers keep going on strike because they keep testing positive for the coronavirus. Go figure that one out, huh? Is he hiring 100 people to keep up with demand, or is he hiring 100,000 people because all his employees are continuously getting sick because Amazon, according to their employees, aren't providing the adequate PPE and protections for those employees? I don't know. That's hypothetically, that's why they're striking at all different locations. I wrote the article yesterday. I talked about it in my show today. I talked about it in my show this morning. I talked about it in my show yesterday. That's an ongoing issue with their employees. They're testing positive. They have 25 cases in the Queens location. They have 50 different warehouse distribution centers in the United States that have employees, Amazon direct hire employees, that have tested positive. All warehouse workers. So yes, they have increased demand because everyone's ordering stuff left and right. I ordered new, you know, board and mixer and microphone and all that stuff. I ordered it on Friday. It's not even going to be here until tomorrow. And who knows if it'll even come here tomorrow. Weird, though, it's not tracking on Amazon. I got a message directly from UPS. Go figure that one out. Chuck said, I think guys sitting on piles of cash are going to go out and buy trucks dirt cheap and retread the drivers that receipt, I guess you're trying to say, that fall in the near future. That, I mean, it's not a bad plan if you have the money to do it, to do it. It's also not a bad plan now. You know, I was talking to someone else before and I forgot to mention it. It's a very good time right now to just say, okay, I have a freight brokerage. We're tech enabled. We got a little bit of money. We're good. We know we're going to be able to manage through this. Let's set ourselves up. Let's take this time where freight is slow and we're rebounding and figuring out what we're going to do. Let's take this time to implement some things that could really, really help the supply chain, like utilizing marketplaces and all the different freight tech I talk about, automated tracking through Trucker Tools or whoever you choose, book it now through Trucker Tools or DAT or whatever functionality you want to use. DAT to me is kind of the go-to right now because I'm hooked on it. I used it this weekend, like I said, the DAT book now functionality. And it's awesome, but set your company up that way. So when freight does pick up and shippers are out, because think about it, every shipper that people work with are essentially going to be cold. Because think about it, if you're gone for a month from work and then you get into work the first day and you've got freight to move and you happen to get a phone call and you're super busy and someone comes up and says, hey, I could save you money shipping freight. You're not necessarily thinking about the guy you use every single day because you haven't used him for a month. You see what I'm saying? So it's a very good time for these salespeople when freight starts coming up for these salespeople to come in and give a new version of their company to say, hey, listen, yeah, we saw what happened with COVID and how drastically unprepared the supply chain was to survive. So these are the steps we've taken to make it so that we are fully able to never have any issues at all. You know, and to be able to account for those supply chains and get new customers. Because I think that's something that a lot of people, me as a salesperson, it's what I think about. When I think about COVID, I'm not necessarily thinking about everything that's happening now. I'm thinking about what kind of position I could put myself in so when this rebounds, I can maximize on customers. Like, who can I go after as a customer now? Because in my head, every customer is a green customer now. Every customer is available. Why? Because you haven't been shipping for a month. So everything's fresh. If I come in like Banshee and say, hey, listen, I could save you money. You're not going to, the customer you or the carrier or broker you work with every single day, is it going to be fresh in your mind? That's my opinion. I don't know. You know, that could backfire on me. But I know when companies in the past, I've been successful at going after, looking at press releases, find companies that are closing for a week or 2 weeks for inventories. Most of you guys that work on the corporate side have seen that, where a big shipper will close for a week or two to inventory. So they stop shipping everything. I've had success calling those customers right as the inventory is done and they get back to shipping to say, hey, listen, I know you just did an inventory. You probably have this and this in mind. I'd love to alleviate some of that stuff. What is some of the value added services I could provide so that you use us? There's all different ways to do it. But buying a truck may be a good one. I don't know about truck prices, if they're down or if they're up. Who knows? I don't know. Microlithic said suicides are through the roof. Hopefully not. I accidentally watched one on Facebook this morning. I didn't know what the hell I was watching until it was too late. Bugged me, because why was that even on Facebook? Mr. Lampshade said, I hope the restaurants come back strong because I miss the experience. So do I. I miss a good burger. Like a real good burger. That's what I miss. That's what I really like to have. But that's me. Michael Schultz said, we're getting ready to park some trucks. Rates are below our operating costs. And it's making sure it's making sense. It's I guess you're meant to say it's making sense to not keep running. Yeah. I mean, it's every company is faced with some really tough choices right now. Really tough choices right now. But Jim Wagner said, why do brokers expect carriers to haul loads for a dollar a mile or less? Well, no broker expects a carrier to haul a mile. Again, I'm not going to keep going over into how a freight broker actually comes about with the rate. It's not like they're just pulling a rate out of their ass and saying, okay, we're going to charge 89 cents per mile. It's not the way that freight is figured out. Are there probably some brokers out there right now that are taking advantage of the situation to make it 30 or 40% profit margins or more? Yeah, absolutely. But the real deal about it is freight. The lower a broker pays, typically that's because a customer is tightening the belt, or that's just what the market is paying, and that's what the customer is basing the rate off of. The broker can only suggest some things. Like if and I already talked about it in depth this week, so I'm not going to touch on it too much, but it's brokers are not dictating rates, guys. You guys do. I know you have a hard time believing that, but think about it. If you do not accept the load, guess what? I do not make money. I'm a broker. I only make money when a carrier takes a load. If you do not take the load, then I do not make any money. If you guys all in one day said, screw it, we're not taking any freight today, and you all got together, which would never happen in my, it will never happen. But if everyone got together and said it, would it affect me drastically? No, I'd be sitting there applauding you guys because my freight anyway, it doesn't matter. But some of the other people would bring awareness. But that's the thing. If you guys come in and there's really like, because right now we have an overabundance of capacity. When you have an overabundance of capacity, rates are going to plummet. Especially you have diesel prices relatively low and all that stuff too. It dropped again this week. It the cost to operate a truck is low, but it's getting higher. You know, it's kind of a catch 22. Whatever. Jeffrey Child said, any word on the SBA program, how long it takes before you get money? Have no idea. I heard all sorts of conflicting stuff. The PPP, the Paycheck Protection Plan, funds are hard to get, and I haven't met anyone that's been successful in getting them yet. I've heard of people that have been preliminary approved or whatever, but in the SBA loans, the $10,000 loan, I don't know. I heard the original application that was up isn't the right one and this and that. It's so hard to follow, I just don't care anymore. David Forshey on Facebook said, owner-operators can now apply for unemployment under the CARE Act. Yes, they can. But then again, I don't know. Yes, owner-operators can apply for unemployment. So can Uber drivers. And they're doing it because I'm in a bunch of Uber driver groups too, because I'm in like groups for everything just because I want to find out anything that has to do with transportation. And these guys started, as soon as they heard, they were already filing complaints. But Uber's been tanky for a while, so I don't know. The whole thing is just weird. The whole thing is weird because freight is down. Okay, we all see that. There's a super surge of capacity. There's no freight out there, literally no freight out there. And when you do find a load, the rates suck. So what do you do? You know, there's nothing. That's why it's very important to try to save money. So you're at least able to go. You know, you're at least able to pay your bills and all that stuff, or just use forbearances and all that, because every credit card, every bank loan, everything right now has some sort of forbearance on it where you just got to call and ask for it. I'm sure your truck loans do it. I'm sure everybody does it. Team Tiny says, or maybe Bezos could just forego his profits for one day and start his own relief fund. Yeah. These are the Amazon comments. Laz said, freight is slow. Hell, I'm getting slammed. I know we were busy today, too. If freight is slow for trucks because we have an overabundance of capacity, as these shippers are closing, these trucks are moving to the spot market. Now that we have more trucks in the spot market but less freight, it means that brokers are busy as shit because we're booking freight still. Because our phones are blowing up because there's so many trucks out there. For you guys out there, you're having a hard time. For example, we posted like 20 loads around 10 o'clock this morning, and we had, I don't know, like three left at like 10:30. No joke. That it's just freight is moving quick. That's what it is. Look at this. The GOAT. I know who that is. Look at that. The GOAT said, saving the factoring world. That cracks me up. This is definitely, hopefully, this is someone at OTR Capital, the GOAT of factoring. That's funny. He said, same in the factoring world, tons of carriers who have never done it before are getting into it. Oh, in terms of factoring, yeah. Also, the ones who currently factor either have a company who cannot handle working from home. Oh, where'd it go? Or not. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. Aaron Moneypenny said, what's up, man? What's up, buddy? Sorry, it's delayed like 6 minutes in comments right now because I'm catching up. Not all freight is that cheap. I don't know. Well, I haven't moved anything over $2 a mile, including full truckloads. So And including, granted, a lot of mine's partial loads, but even if you take the rate I'm paying for a partial, it still would be well under $2 a mile if it was a full truckload. And that's just because that's what the market is dictating and that's what the customer is dictating. Because the customer is also not going to see the profit on the end either. Everyone's taking a hit. That's what everyone has to realize. Manufacturing's taking a hit. People have to pay more for the product that they use to make the product that you're shipping. Therefore, they got to tighten down on the amount of freight spend they have. And if they know they could tighten down on the freight spend because it only inconveniences a carrier or two, it's easy for the carrier just to say, well, it's definitely got to be the broker's fault. That's what everyone says anyway. But whatever. What can you do? I'll be the bearer of bad news, I suppose. Call-in line is active if anyone has some whatever to call in. 914-803-4008. Tell us what you're seeing on the road. If you're a driver, if you're a broker, tell us how your day was. Tell us. I don't know how you sell your name. You say your name. Lydian Adamiri said, don't brokers always try to do that common? I don't know what your sentence is supposed to say. So I can't answer that. Maybe someone else could try to decipher what this means, but don't brokers always try to do that common? I don't know. A lot of people see, this is the problem. There's a huge issue between carriers and brokers. There's a lack of respect, and it goes both ways. Me, I'm different because I'm like a middleman. I'm a carrier-centric broker, meaning I think a lot about the carrier. The whole way I broker is based on my experience being a carrier first. That's how I literally build my whole business. So I'm a little bit different, but I see as a carrier and I see other people, there's just such a disconnect between customer or between carrier and broker. And the way that carriers think brokers act is so wrong. And it goes both ways because brokers don't understand. A lot of brokers don't understand what actually takes place in a truck and what it's like to be on the road for 10 days, 15 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks without seeing your family and just be isolated, or to go to a restaurant to try to get food, but you can't because they won't let you go to the drive-thru because you're in a truck and you can't walk up because they suck. You, like, we aren't experiencing that. There's a huge disconnect in the industry, and that's why I think that if a broker wants to be successful, if you're interested in getting involved in the broker industry, go spend time in a truck first. Because then you'll have an understanding of what it's like to be a truck driver, what it's like to deal on the roads. That's why I feel like I'm an effective dispatcher or an effective broker, because I owned a trucking fleet and I drove commercially for years. I love it. I would much rather be doing that than anything else. If someone right now bought me a truck and said, let's go, then I would do it because I like it. And I'm financially able to do it. Aaron Moneypenny said, Aaron, you should call in too. I heard you on Shaggy Show. No, I won't pick on you for doing that, but whatever. 914-803-4008 if anyone wants to call in. But you said, what made you stop being a driver and become a broker? Money. That's what made me stop. So, you know, I'll give a little background because someone else asked me earlier today how I got involved in logistics. So I started a trucking company first and was a driver. Actually, I started to drive as a driver first, then got a truck and then started trucking. And then, but I'm a money guy and I'm a business guy. So I was always like, I need to make more money. I need to make more money. I need to make more money. So I just kept adding trucks and adding more trucks and adding more trucks. And I was not doing it the right way. Yes, was I doing everything legally and above board? Yes. Once I figured out how to do it for the first 6 months, I didn't even have an MC number. But I didn't know anything about it. Once I kept going, I just kept adding trucks because I love the industry. And I saw how much money I could make as trucks. And then something drastic happened because of my sales ability and not to like toot my own horn, but I'm a pretty damn good salesperson. So I kept making and I kept getting accounts and getting freight that I couldn't necessarily handle just on my own trucks. Some were outside my zones and the radius that I covered. Other freight, I was just at capacity with my trucks. So I was unable to handle it. So I started brokering it without a broker authority, didn't know anything about a brokerage authority. Because like I tell you guys, I'm self-taught in this, and I've screwed up plenty of times. But once I found out, because, you know, someone told me, I think, and then I called the surety bond company, and they asked what I did. They saw that I was a trucking company. They saw I had multiple trucks. They're like, why don't you just become a freight forwarder and add a forwarding authority to your bond or to your authority, which is what I did. ultimately, this is before Map 21. It's where you could still have, you know, two authorities and all that stuff. So I had a, because a lot of the freight that I was moving, even that I was brokering out, I picked up on my trucks and brought it back to my warehouse and shipped it from there. So because of that, you meet the definition of a forwarder. I took possession of the freight, picked it up, brought it to my warehouse, and then would send it out on a different truck. But then I started realizing how much money was to be made. I had no overhead as on the loads that I brokered. It was literally just, this is how much it costs. This is how much I made. It wasn't like, this is how much it costs. This is what it costs for the driver. This is what it costs for this. This is what it costs for truck insurance. This is what it costs for the truck. I didn't have any of that shit to think about. It was just two sets of numbers. One, this is what it costs, and this is how much I made. And then I realized, hey, I could make a lot of money, and I don't have the overhead. So I started doing that and doing that and doing that. At the same time, I separated the forwarding company and the carrier authority. And then shortly after I did that, luckily, you know, because I'm a smart guy, my trucks, the rapidly growing up or rapidly accelerating and hiring too many drivers. Here's the problem. Like when I said I did everything legally, I did. My drivers all were, you know, compliant drivers. Everyone had valid licenses. Everyone took drug tests. Everyone did everything. But when I said I did it wrong, it's because I didn't qualify the drivers properly. Like I would look at their MVR and say, oh, you're good. Send them for a drug test. Oh, you're good. You're good to go. Just assume they could drive a truck because they had experience doing it. Unfortunately, three of the drivers could not. I had one driver on December like 5th or something, a couple of years ago. I had one driver fall asleep. He was in an early morning run that we did to Buffalo every 2 days. So he came in and he would leave at like 2 or 3 in the morning. Well, I got a call at like 7 in the morning by the state police saying he flipped the truck. He fell asleep, went over the median, flipped the truck. Truck was full of freight. So that effed it up. And so that was one claim and $15,000 tow bill. And there's all sorts of insurance issues, which I've talked about in the past with my insurance agent committing fraud. That was one of the reasons why I was able to grow so rapidly. And I will say this too, is because my insurance agent was committing fraud. She was literally saying, hey, yeah, I'm adding your truck to the authority into your policy. And I was paying them for it, but she wasn't adding the truck. She was giving me fake certificates. Whatever. We found that out later after the claims. Second big claim thing that I had is I had a driver that was pulling. You guys remember those Rain Ferret trucks? Sorry, my phone's blown up. I got to keep hanging up because I forgot to turn it off. But remember those Rain for Rent trailers? They're like, they hold water or whatever the hell they do. So we're doing a power only one of those. And they were coming back to my warehouse to drop the trailer off to have someone else pick up. And the guy's at the bottom of my street, of my warehouse street, and it's Fifth Avenue in Paterson, New Jersey. If anyone knows where that is, it's the bad area of Paterson, but whatever. He's making a left-hand turn coming up, and he comes up, and he's missing gears and doing all whatever. It's an older truck, and he's trying to come up a hill at the same time from a stop. I don't really blame him for it. Anyway, someone else hits him and runs right into the side of the truck. And then he's just not looking in his mirror, thinking that the truck just has resistance because he's going up a hill. See, he drags his car, you know, a good 20 feet, you know, because again, he was coming from a stop. So he wasn't even going fast. And then that was a claim. And then to top it off, so that was like December 17th. And then on New Year's Eve, well, it was actually New Year's morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning. I get a call from my leasing company that I lease the trucks from because I was doing like a lease purchase for all my straight trucks. So, which was good. I saved money, but they call me at like 6 o'clock in the morning. They're like, which one of your dumbass drivers is driving this truck through blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Everyone's off. It's New Year's Day. And they're like, no, your truck was involved in hit and runs. The cops got the truck. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, it's not. No one's driving. It wasn't one of my trucks. Dude, like, it was your truck. We got on the GPS. And I'm like, are you kidding? So I come from my house. I go all the way down there. I talk to the cops on the way. They're like, yeah, your truck's here. We locked the keys inside. So you're good. They said they put the keys inside, but they didn't lock the damn doors. Oh, I take it back. This was a couple of years ago. They locked the doors, but didn't take, there were no keys in it because whoever stole the truck stole the keys because the driver left the keys in the truck. He lost his job anyway, by the way. But he left his keys. Where we parked the truck was in a cage. So it was a big metal cage and it had big rolling doors and a big padlock on it and all that stuff. Very secure lot. Anyway, they came in and came in. We caught them on camera. They looked like freaking ninjas. They came in, cut the cable, walked out. The guy backed the truck because we had it pulled in and around. He backed the truck out in one spot. I've been driving trucks for a long time, and I would have had to three-point turn that straight truck out. I looked just because of the position. When I watched him on the camera, he backed it out in one fall swoop. He knew what he was doing. And I knew he wasn't one of my employees because I didn't have any employees that could drive that good. Anyway. So when I finally got down there with the spare key, truck was gone again. Called the police again. They're like, oh, no, we didn't tow it. Called all the tow companies. They're like, no. The dude came back after he crashed into all the cars, came back and restole my truck from the crash site. That is not a joke. So, of course, because of that happening, because I had to file a second police report. So there was a police report for the first accident and the multiple hit runs because he hit a whole pile of cars. And then I had to do a second police report on the second claim. So guess what my insurance company did? They treated it as two separate claims. So now I had four claims in the course of a month. Guess what they did to me? They rewrote my policy and gave me like a $15,000 a month premium increase that I couldn't afford because I was running too lean because I didn't save any money. Long story short, trucking company was gone. And then I just had the brokerage, which started helping me to realize, okay, I can make a lot of money just being a broker. I don't have the overhead. Don't have to hire shitty drivers. Don't have to hire anybody. I'm not dealing. I don't have a warehouse, a 25,000 square foot warehouse that I have to heat in the damn winter. You know, that was a huge expense for me because it was up north. So heating that place was like $10,000 a month just in electricity for the winter. It was expensive. It was expensive to have all that stuff. As a broker, we have no overhead. I mean, think about it. Me as a broker right now, I've got that computer. That computer is probably a $2,000 computer with multiple screens. I've got my phone system. Collectively, I pay $700 a month for it, you know, for all my agents and all that stuff. And I've got a printer that's in the other room that's like a $1,200 printer that can do everything. I swear it's a transformer. It could fly around the house because I paid that much for it. It should do that. But that's I realized that I could make a lot of money just being a broker and not have to deal with getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and offloading my trucks. Because as an owner, as I was telling the guy before, I'm super hands-on with everything I do. So all my trucks, I had 22 trucks, including owner operators. I booked those trucks every day myself. I had dispatch assistants, employees of mine that would do all the paperwork once I booked them, but I would book them. Why? Because nobody could do it as good as I could. So I booked all those trucks every single day. I realized when I was a freight broker that I could literally use that same determination once I got the customer to cover a lot of freight and to cover a lot of freight quickly. You know, and I encountered as a broker, I encountered all the same issues that new brokers have. You don't have credit, this and that, this and that. So I had to make the decision, even though I was an existing company, but I had to make the decision to go become an agent because I was getting turned down by carriers because I didn't have enough credit. So I did. I became an agent for a big guy. Actually, I was smart. I made them buy my book of business before I signed their non-compete because they had one. And I became an agent for them. And I worked with them and I grew up a big agency and then sold the agency to the employees. And then I moved on and became a sales director for somebody else, a big 3PL. And I taught a whole pile of people how to use my sales method and what I do and how I get customers, you know, and it was a little bit different because there I was forced to do the cold call stuff and to talk about cold calls. And I hate cold calls and don't like making them, but I built a sales team for that company. And then I became an agent again. And then I left and became a firefighter for a couple of years. And then I came back again to logistics. And this is where I am now. I have my brokerage agency and all that. There's a big history. That's what you guys wanted to hear, right? That took forever. But yeah, that's how I got involved in the broker side of things, Aaron. Aaron Moneypenny, who originally asked that question. I've been a broker now for, I don't know, collectively when I first started the freight forwarding company years ago, that was probably 11 years ago. So, and ever since then, I've had my foot, even when I was a firefighter, I was still a broker. I was a Landstar agent at that point because I needed a job because being a public servant pays nothing. But we have a caller. Let's pick this up. What's up, buddy? You're on the air.
What's up, man?
What's up?
I thought I'd call in and see if I get some insight from you, man. I'm thinking about, we've had anywhere from, you know, 5 to 15 trucks at any given time. You said you had 22. How do you get to that 20 level, man?
Well, you just heard how I got to. I just kept adding them. They were company trucks. They weren't owner operators. I had three owner operators who did my line haul. Everything else was company trucks. I just kept buying them.
So you're just like lease purchasing them, and then like from a lease company, and then just re-lease purchasing them back to the driver?
No. They were all company employees. All my drivers were employees, benefits, all that stuff.
How the hell were you able to afford that? It must have been a better market.
Yeah, I was running regional LTL. So they stayed. My drivers all stayed local. I only had one driver that went over the road just because he wouldn't stay local, and he was a good driver. But, yeah, they were all home every night.
Where were you?
We were in New York.
Drive-in, reefer, flatbed, or just a little bit of everything?
Drive-in and LTL, yeah. No flatbed stuff. But
no flatbed stuff?
Nope. Yeah, because you're down here, right, in Florida?
Yeah. I live over in Fort Myers. You're on the east side, right?
Yeah. I could tell by your number. But see, the thing, the way that I set up the company doesn't work for Florida-based companies because I was in northern New Jersey. So I was right outside of New York City. I could be in New York City in an hour on a Saturday when there's no traffic. I could be in Boston in 4 hours. I could be in Baltimore in 4 hours, and I could be in Pittsburgh in 6 hours. So I was in such a good area. I had an oversaturation of the market. So there was a tremendous amount of freight there for me, and it worked really well. It doesn't necessarily mean that you could start the same type of operation anywhere else because you don't have that kind of, well, maybe you could in Chicago because there's a lot of freight around there and a lot of big cities that are within a day's drive. But the reason why it worked for me is just because of where I was and because I had all that freight and all that availability right there. But yeah, all my drivers were company drivers, paid employees, hourly. It sucks because you end up paying a lot, especially in Jersey. You know, my drivers, CDL drivers, the class A truck drivers were making $20 an hour, you know, but that my cost to that was like $29 an hour, plus all benefits and employee match and all that stuff. So it's expensive. It's expensive to have employees, but you got to pay drivers good.
That seems like it's really expensive. I've actually considered. So we've got mostly all owner operators now. I converted from having company trucks just because it was too expensive.
Right.
You know what I mean? And now I'm looking at buying some semis. See, we had a lot of hotshot trucks when we started out too. I had four of my own trucks, all new trucks.
Yeah.
You know, Fords and F-250s and Dodge Cummins, and they were just too expensive.
Right. Yeah, a lot of companies are doing that. A lot of companies are doing that. They're switching to the owner-operator model, and it's not necessarily a bad model. For me, I didn't like it because everything I do is forced dispatch. I don't like lazy drivers. I got rid of them pretty quick. So everything I did was forced dispatch. And basically, I had routes. So my, like, the driver that would drive to Baltimore every day ran to Baltimore every single day. It was the same run that he did every single day. Say he would come in early, his truck would be loaded. Normally my drivers would start at like 4 o'clock. I would come in at like 2 o'clock in the morning and load all the trucks myself. Why would I do that? Again, because I want to control everything. And so I wanted to control those drivers. So I came in, I loaded the trucks. I was there when they got there. That's how I'd be able to. And that's why I jumped in the truck a lot, because of the people that I hired. I was also different than some, because I would hire people that had a record that would make you like run away. And the reason, because they needed a job. And to be honest, most of the time they were some of the most truthful people you could hire. But they also would party on the weekends, and it would be hard for them to show up on Monday or Sunday runs or anything like that, or even Friday runs. And so if I was there, I'd be able to jump in the truck and make the deliveries myself. So that's what I did. Owner-operator model is good. You can make a lot of money at it if you do it the right way. But just make sure you treat your drivers fairly, you know. And if you're going to buy company trucks.
Yeah, we've been at it for a while, and we treat our guys pretty good. You know, we start them off at 15% on the semis and take them to 10 after 90 days if they want to dispatch themselves. I mean, if I dispatch them, it's all force dispatch. We don't let them kind of pick where they want to go and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can't force dispatch. Well, I get you, but you can't really force dispatch owner out. But I get what you're saying. I don't know. If you're going to buy trucks, though, and you're going to own those trucks, do not do some stupid lease purchase thing. Do not put those as company trucks. You know, that's what I would do. Put company drivers in them and just keep those drivers happy. And because that's what drivers are looking for. They're looking for good homes. You know, or put.
Can you make any money with buying? You know, I see a lot of guys doing it, but and especially a lot of my owner operators come to me with 14, 15 model trucks, Freightliners, for instance, and they come on and they all seem to have a problem right around 2-3 months. They have a radiator or you know something happened. Transmission.
Yeah, because you own equipment. It's like it's gonna happen. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I don't have much experience with used trucks or older trucks because when I leased the trucks, I didn't have maintenance plans or anything like that. So I had to pay, you know, if they broke down, it was on me. But I had brand new trucks, you know. So at this time, I had, I think it was like 26.
Where do you get brand new trucks at that you can buy multiple of them or lease multiple of them like that, though?
Well, it was from a company up in Jersey. I don't even know if they're still around. But for example, like if you didn't pay them, they showed up to get their money. They didn't even care about the truck anymore. They showed up to get their money from you, if you know what I'm saying. It's a Jersey company, but they had a lot and they treated me fairly, you know? And so, and here's the kicker. When I gave up the trucking company, so when the trucking company was going under, well, when it closed and before it was going under, while I was running the brokerage and running a truck to try to make all the money back, I called that company and I said, listen, I'm out. What do you want to do with the trucks? They said, just have them dropped off. If there's nothing wrong with them, we'll rip up your contracts. That is why they were a good company because they literally did that. I came in there with the trucks. I had a balance too of like a month on a couple of trucks and 2 months on some. They came in and literally ripped up the contracts right in front of me. They didn't care because they got, you know, brand new trucks there for them to resell. They didn't care, but it is what it is. You know, I'm not a big fan of companies that have company trucks and then put 1099 contractors in them. I don't like it. I think it's dishonest. And not to say that you're dishonest. I just don't think the procedure is dishonest. If you're going to buy a company truck, put a company driver in it or let the driver figure out how to buy his own damn truck. That's my opinion.
Well, when I started out, we had all hotshot trucks and it just wasn't affordable to have them as you know, to own the truck and pay all the insurance. And we were, when we started out, we were new too, so we're paying high insurance rates.
Yeah.
But to pay the driver as an employee, it was just almost impossible to do it on hotshot load board freight. You know, we didn't have any customers when we started. It was a pain in the ass. There was not enough money in there to keep it going and have them as employees, you know?
Yeah.
Now we've kind of phased a lot of those out and we're going to the owner-operator model, but I'm thinking about buying some semis and going that route. But I'm just trying to get some insight from several different people in the industry that have been as big as 20 trucks or 25 trucks. That's how big I want to be, you know?
Yeah. The only thing I would say is just go slow. That was my problem is I went too fast. Come on, dude. This guy keeps calling me over and over and over. Hold on. I'm not answering the phone.
Go ahead, man.
Hold on. It's annoying. Keeps calling. I literally hung up on him like 6 times. But see here, that's it. That's another. Hey, thanks for calling in, man. I'm going to end up because there's a lot of feedback, but thank you for calling. That's another thing that's interesting about being a broker too, is carriers can't follow simple damn rules. So when it calls in on every one of my load posts, it says which extension to post. It's automatically set in there. So it says which extension to call as long as the dispatcher puts in the information correctly, the broker rather. Then when you call the main menu, it specifically says, dial this extension for available loads. If you see a load posted on the load board, dial this extension. Guess who's not on that extension? Me, because I own the company and I don't broker freight every single day. And yet I get probably 100 phone calls to my phone. It's annoying as hell. There you go. So that was Aaron that I was talking to. Ray, that's Aaron. Aaron, that's Ray. You're welcome. Anthony Fowler said, am I a fan of lease purchase? No. I think I talked about that already. I don't know much about it besides what I was doing. You know, I don't know much about it on the semi side. I did one time by a company called Accelerated Truck Leasing. They're still open. They're out of Indiana. And I think it was either Accelerate Truck Leasing or Accelerated Truck Leasing. And I bought an old Freightliner Century from them and it sucked. and it had issues immediately. I flew a driver down to Atlanta to pick it up, and he barely even made it back. And then I called them, and I said, hey, your truck is shit. You owe me money. And they said, well, why don't you just get a different truck? So we had a different truck bought, and then we had no issues with that truck. But me, personally, on the semis that I bought, I was a big fan of buying them in auction. And that's one thing I should have clarified, Aaron. The semis that I had, the majority of them, because I only had the one Freightliner Columbia that we had for the over the road stuff that I had. The owner ops had it. But then I had, it was called accelerated leasing or something like that. It wasn't OTR. A lot of people say they're ripoffs and all that stuff. You're going to end up paying more. You could just go to a company or get a bank loan if you have good credit. The reason you go to those companies is either your cash flow isn't there to go get a loan. Like, for example, you have 19 straight trucks leased, or you just like a truck and you want to use their financing. That's why I went to them, and I never had any problems with them. Paid off the truck with them, never had any issues. And then I gave the truck to one of the drivers when the company closed. But TC Boggs said the advice is to get a loan on the East Coast from Vinny or Guido. Well, it fits those type of names, you know, because like when the truck was stolen. So here's a kicker, and then I'm going to end this because this video is running long. When the truck was stolen, I went into the Patterson Police Department. And keep in mind, this is when my truck was stolen for the second time, you know, because it was stolen and then crashed and then they came back and stole it again. When I went to the police department again to flip out on them for locking the truck in the car and not keeping someone with it or anything, because I was only like a half an hour away. They should have kept a cop there until I got there. So I went to the police department to flip out. And the guy's like, do you know we had a quadruple murder? We don't care about your truck. They flat out told me that. They're like, we don't care about your truck, sir. And I said, what are you going to do if you find it? And they were like, we'll pull it over if we see it driving. Otherwise, I said, are you going to look for the truck? They're like, nope. When they went back, because remember, we tracked it via GPS, but when they went back, they found the GPS unit on the side of the truck. Or so where the truck was parked, that's where the GPS unit was. So the moral of the story is the truck was gone. About 2 months later, I get a call from the family that owned the truck leasing company, and calls me. He's like, hey man, I'm gonna send you a picture. And I'm like, all right, of what? And he's like, a truck hood. Tell me if this is your hood. And hung up. And he sends me a picture of the hood of my truck, and you see in the background there's all sorts of truck parks, and then you see two big dudes standing next to a guy who clearly works at this truck yard. And I call him back and I'm like, yeah, that's mine. He goes, yep, that's what I needed. See ya. I've never heard from them again because they had a truck stolen from their lot and they went to the police and the police did nothing. And so I think they were just doing all because they could tell where the GPSs are. And after my truck was stolen and another truck was stolen, they started burying the GPSs in different engine compartments and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, that's it. Aya said, I have a question. Is there any risk adding new customers? Any risk of them going under? In my expedite is very slow since I mainly specialize in automotive. No, there's no risk in adding new customers. That's what I was saying. Right now is a perfect time for prospecting. Do as much background as you can. Customers aren't going to be actively taking on new brokers or new carriers right now. I wouldn't if I was a customer. I'd be waiting to see what the hell is going to happen. We're living in a very vulnerable time, but I'd wait and see. And then once we figure out what's going to happen and once they do, that's a good time. And if you've already got your preliminary prospecting done, so you know about the company, you know who they are, what they do, all that stuff, what they manufacture, how much they ship, all the same shit you can find out by just Googling and, you know, using some of the other resources. You'll know what they're shipping and you'll know how to do stuff. But yeah, I think you should. I mean, you got to get business to keep open. That's kind of the thing. Justin said he went through Lone Mountain Leasing. Good, easy financing. Bad side, didn't own the truck, so I had no equity in it in case of a breakdown. Nerfaloo said, yo, Steven, hope you're doing good. Guess what kind of load I'm doing today? 53-foot dry van, trailer damage, but freight is reimbursing. What? Trailer damage, but freight is good. Recovery en route, 6 skids. We must pay cash to towing company to relieve freight. $3,200. Yeah, you're lucky, but you better be careful if you're hauling a damaged trailer because the cops have been going after those guys too. Carrier's paying it in cash. We're reimbursing them a load tender, 1,500 miles, $5,300. Cool. To the damage. Yeah, well, because you can't really do that, but whatever. Aaron Moneypenny said, what's the deal with you shouldn't have broker MC and carrier MC in the same name and stuff? Well, because your insurance will drop you, because insurance do not want you to have an associated MC and carrier MC. That's why they tell you, well, that you can do it. And there are plenty of people who do it, and then they get their renewal. So they start a carrier side first, and they just add a broker authority, or they set up a separate broker authority with the same company name, phone number, email, address, whatever. And when insurance goes through their rewriting process for your renewal, they're going to see you have an associated brokerage, and they are not going to rewrite your policy. So that's why you always set it up in a separate name, separate address, separate phone number, separate everything. As stupid as that is, because when I had my trucks and all that, that wasn't an issue. And mind you, I had hotshot rigs up until the early of 2019. And then I got rid of them in March of 2019. A year ago last month is when I got rid of the last truck because I was losing my ass. So I just got rid of them. And I'll never own another truck ever. Aaron Moneypenny said, how do the companies like Landstar do it? Because they were governed in. They've been doing it for a long time, and they're also self-insured. But because that's the thing. Keep in mind, when I had my carrier and forwarder and broker, I had a carrier authority, brokerage authority, and forwarding authority. And that was, 8 or 9 years ago? So you could do it at that time, too. My insurance, my insurance agent sold me my cargo insurance policy, sold me because I had to have cargo. My cargo was universal for my carrier side and my forwarding authority. Then I had a surety bond. Then I had issues on or insurance on my warehouse as well. And then I switched all those policies, went with the new agent because temporarily we moved to Virginia. So I moved the operation of the company, kept the warehouse in New Jersey. And switched all the insurance over to a Virginia-based company and tagged everything again and all that. And that insurance agent was the one who got me. But, I mean, I got hurt in the end because their errors and omissions insurance had to pay for everything. You know, but ultimately it took like 9 months to have it settled. So it was a big deal. It was a big deal. All right, guys, I think that's the show. Make sure you guys check out freightbrokerlive.com. It is literally the leading source for everything freight news and everything that has to do with trucking. And it just so happens that it's my website, and I'm the one that writes most of the stuff that's on here, and I design it. And look, I'm on the front page, too. It's a very cool page. I spend a lot of time on the website writing articles and designing it. I designed that whole website myself, taught myself WordPress. You're welcome, because it's really easy to read. Make sure you check it out. If you guys see an article that I share it. If you see an article on social media, please share it. If you're watching this on Facebook, share the video after. If you're watching it on LinkedIn, I don't know, do whatever you do on LinkedIn, share it to YouTube, hit a like button, do all that stuff. Guys, stay safe. Happy trucking. Do whatever you do. Today's Wednesday. Tomorrow's Thursday. I will have my new show that I'm putting out every day, called 5 Minutes of Freight. Make sure you check that out tomorrow morning. Check it out every day. Share it out to your friends, okay? It comes out on YouTube, and then I share it to social media, and I write an article about it. So make sure you share it out to everybody because I want that thing to do good. Plus, the videos are monetized, so if I get like 1,000 clicks, I make like $10. See you guys.